the higher the level of trust I create with you, the deeper the content will be on the meetings I have with you.
What's up, guys? Welcome to the show. Today, I'm a little excited. We've got one of the top sales gurus, sales trainers in the industry, gentleman by the name of Mark Hunter, been doing sales training for corporations, salespeople like yourself for over 20 years. Okay. He's done sales training for some of the top companies like Salesforce, American Express, Lenovo, and he's nice enough to come on the show today. He is the best-selling author of the two books. If you haven't read them already, go ahead and check them out. Here's one of them, High Profit Prospecting. The other one's High Profit Selling. And he's got a new book coming out March 31st, A Mind for Sales. Mark Hunter, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you for having me on. Let's have a good time. Let's talk sales.
Yeah, listen, I know, you know, you're an expert in sales, you're an expert in prospecting, but it all begins with prospecting, right? A lot of the guys in our industry, you know, sales guys, selling, I always say selling's not that easy. I mean, there's a lot of sales guys out there. Where the rubber meets the road is prospecting, right? And we'll talk about the mind for sales in your new book. Let's talk about mindset. How should these sales guys be coming in on a Monday morning and setting their mind and getting ready to start a Monday off? Because that's where it all begins.
It is where it starts. And so many guys, what happens is they come in and they, oh, it's just another week. It's just another week. Every week, every day, we've got so many opportunities. What I got to do is I've got to take a step back and I got to say, okay, what were the accomplishments the week before? And I don't care. I may have had a crappy week and you give yourself a big hug. You go, I love myself. I love myself. That was great. And what you do is you got to sit down and you say, what are the outcomes I'm expecting this week? Not the number of dials, not the number of calls, not the number of meetings. What are the outcomes I want to create? Focus on the outcomes. This is about getting your mind set straight. Because here's the whole thing. I can make 100 calls. I can make 1,000 calls. But what I want to do is I want to have what's the outcome? I want to be able to connect with 2 or 3 companies. I want to be able to set up killer meetings that are going to happen. Or maybe it's one meeting. Maybe it's 10 phone calls. I don't care what it is. You set up the outcome and you frame, and then you back yourself into it. What is it going to take to do that? But too many times what happens is we go into the week reacting to the week. I want you to be proactively controlling the week. And it starts with your headset.
I think we fall into the mindset of just walking in and looking at, oh, this is going to be too hard. And so you're suggesting, hey, let me just back into, I want to get X amount of meetings this week. What is it going to take for me to get there? And just look at it from a number standpoint. Is that what you're kind of going at?
Well, I'm looking at it from a number standpoint, but I'm looking at it from an outcome standpoint, because here's the whole thing. You may be selling into this particular type of industry, this part, you know, it may be 200 people, 200 employees. It may be whatever. And you know, you can make a difference. You know, you make a difference because you've got 3 other clients in that same vertical, in that same industry. Fine. That's great. And so it's that headset. It's that, okay, what is it going to take? What is the outcome? What was the value equation that allowed me to get these other clients last year in that same industry? Okay. What are they? Okay. So what are the questions I got to be asking? So I'm framing up and I'm going in with this instinct that I know I can make a difference. I know I can make a difference. It is my obligation to you to get that meeting with you. Oh, you rejected me. Okay. That's okay. I'm going to come back and I'm going to hit you again. I'm going to hit you again. I'm going to hit you again. You see, what I see happening in this industry, we get to play it, is we make 1 or 2 calls and, well, they won't take our meeting. Well, they won't return the call. And we back off. And you say, wait a minute, hold it. This is an industry I know I can help. They have a type of employee. I know I can put them into the right program. I know I can do this right with you. You have an obligation to keep bringing them. What happens many times, and if you think about it, you know, okay, I want to say, I'm going to make this up. Okay, we'll say I got a 300 employee company that I want to go in and try to get. Well, they've already got healthcare in place. So for some reason, I've got to get whoever is in there now out and me in. How am I going to do that? I've got to bring them a level of value, a level of insights. And it's not price. It's not, well, gee, let's do a cost. I don't care about a cost analysis. I want to be able to say, hey, I'm going to be able to come in and I'm going to be able to share with you insights that are going to help you from an employee retention, from an employee gap standpoint. Oh, you've got X number of employees that are going to be retiring in the next 5 years. Well, you know what? They have a different set of needs than, oh, you've got a set of millennials, which maybe are going to be really creating families over the next 5 years. How do I help you? And the idea is to be bringing customers, bringing my potential clients insights that are going to help them look at their business differently. That's how I begin to get a seat at the table. Because my objective, when I call you, I just got to get a seat at the table. I have to somehow get a seat at the table.
So you're saying the mindset is like, I've got to psych myself up to an extent of, on a Monday morning, hey, I know that I can help these people. It's not just about, well, I got to make it this certain amount of calls. You've got to get yourself in a mindset that I can help these people. I know I can do it. Even though I'm going to get a lot of no's and a lot of rejection, I'm going to be able to help them.
Yeah.
Is that how you're going to motivate yourself in the morning? Because this is the toughest thing. I mean, let's be honest. You come back from a weekend, you're already successful. You already got business coming in when you wake up in the morning. And now I got to get on the phone and got to start prospecting.
Well, see, that's the whole thing. See, this is what I find. So many times what happens, people have been in the business. They've got this book of business already, and they start coasting, and they start coasting. If I'm not hungry to help somebody else, because the phone calls alone, the number of calls alone is not going to motivate me. That's not going to motivate me. Gee, I got to make 20 calls before noon. No, that's not. Hey, I know I've got four customers. I got four companies I work with in this industry already. You know what? Here's three others, and they line up very, very similar. I know I can help them. I know you have to have this mindset that you know you can make a difference in them. And when you know you can make a difference in them, then you begin to back up and you say, okay, what are the questions I can ask? What are the questions I can begin asking that are going to begin getting them thinking? That are going to begin getting them looking, begin getting them realizing what else is happening. It was very, very interesting. I'll share an example. I was working with an insurance broker last year. I was coaching him, a great individual. And what he found out was there was a person in the HR department who had a son that was going through some very critical health issues. And he was just able to provide this HR person with some very insightful information that as a parent, they could use to help their child through this very difficult healthcare situation. It wasn't about insurance. It was about life. What did that do? That HR manager then said, hey, you know what? You need to come in. You need to come in and talk. What did that do? It changed the dialogue. You see, what I have to do is I have to be able to demonstrate that I can bring something to you other than here's the policy. Here's the plan. Here's the program we're going to put in place. Anybody can do that.
Absolutely. In the new book, you talk about seven things motivated people do to stay motivated. What are some of those things that insurance brokers that are kind of stuck in their ways can do to get motivated? Because that's really what it comes down to.
Oh, that is. And here's this whole thing. Don't go thinking anybody else can motivate you, because only you can motivate you. I really hate to drop the mic on that one. You have to motivate yourself. And what you do is, I'm going to share with you a couple of things. First of all, you make a list of all of your clients. You make a list. And what are the outcomes? What are the outcomes that you've been able to help them with? I'm really big into outcomes. And you keep them there. And when you can say that you've helped them achieve this, and it's not just about dollars and cent savings, you've helped them to be able to put in place a benefit package that has allowed them to retain employees, that has allowed them to attract better employees. You've helped them be able to get this new division up and running when they were suddenly coming into a marketplace. You are able to help them get coverage on employees at this remote location. What did that do for them? Well, that allowed the productivity of that remote location to be higher. You put all those out. You look at that list and you go, dang, I'm good. I actually do some stuff, you know? And that right there. Then what you do is you set yourself up for what I call a Monday morning goal. I want to have a Monday morning goal. Here's what I found. Success creates success. Momentum creates momentum. And what I want to do is I want to set myself up for an easy goal that I know I can achieve by 10 or 11 a.m. on Monday.
You know what's interesting? A small win.
Just a small win. It's just a small win. It might be a win that, you know what? I've got to call these two prospects back. I got to call these three people back or four people. And my goal is just to get one meeting out of them. One meeting. Or maybe I just got to follow up and I just got to get this piece of information over. It's something you create an easy win come 10 or 11 a.m. What does that do? That just psychologically gets you going. It just psychologically creates motivation. In the military, one of the things they teach you in the military is you make your bed to perfection right when you get up. Why? Because that's completing something. See, that's completing a task. See? Now, I don't want it to be a task as in, gee, I got to get this file completed. I want to have a task in terms of a goal, in terms of I created something better for somebody out there. Another technique that I love doing, and I love doing this, and I love doing this on Monday mornings. You may have a whole variety of HR people that you've had the chance to come in contact with. So what you do, and I really suggest, go and do this on a Sunday. You may be reading a magazine or you see this online. Hey, I'm gonna email that link to them. I'm gonna send that to them. They know you, you know them. But suddenly they get this email link. I do this all the time. I do a lot of work in the transportation industry. So there might be an interesting article that I see online. So what I do is I just email that link to CEOs of transportation companies I work with. And there's no sales pitch with it. What do? They go, wow, this guy's thinking of me. This guy's actually thinking of me. And it's amazing. It's those little connections that I love to see. Here's something else that I love doing as a key way to get myself psyched up. I love sending books to people. Not the books I've written. Not the books I've written. Other books. I will read a book or something like that. I go, oh, that's a good book. I'm going to Amazon gift or Barnes & Noble that gift book to prospect. You know, it's a prospect that I've got a little bit of a relationship
with. That gives you another reason for to check in with them and give them a call, right?
Bingo. So here you send them a book on leadership, or maybe it's a book on just business. I don't care what it is. Don't send them a book on healthcare. Do not do that, okay? but you know, it may be a great biography that you read on somebody, and you send it to them. And I'll tell you what, you know what? You're going to get a return phone call. You're going to get a return email. Sure, it costs you 10, 15, 20 bucks. I don't care. You know what? That is gold. To me, that has been one of the best approaches I've used to be able to take somebody who can't quite get that meeting, you know?
Yeah, or it gives you a reason for them to take the call, because, you know, I always look for ways to get them to answer me. I mean, when I would leave prospect meetings too, I would send them all a $5 Dunkin' Donuts or Starbucks gift card thanking them for their time, just so they had some guilt to take my call next time I called, or to send me the information they said they were going to send me.
Right. And what I find is so many people in our business are cheap. Well, I'm not going to do that. No. You know what? You're using your time more wisely. Because what are you doing? You want to get the meeting. You want to be able to have the conversation. You see, trust is currency. You know, I mean, you know, trust is the currency of business. What I got to do is I got to figure out a way. How do I create trust with you to the point that you'll allow me to come in, sit down, and have a meaningful meeting with you? Because again, a lot of times, we see this all the time. HR companies maybe been with the same provider for several years. Oh, it's time to kind of review. So what do? They put on this little fake parade. They're going to parade some people through. And it's just so they can tell the CEO that, yeah, oh yeah, we reviewed. We reviewed. We're staying right here. Yeah. Well, what I want to do is I want to participate in that parade, but I want you to see me as somebody so different. Say, wow, you know what? We do have to do a deep dive with this person. We really got to see what's happening. Because the worst thing that happens in our business, and how many times have we done this? We're asked to provide a quote, and all they use is they use it to negotiate a better deal with their current provider, right? Right? Doesn't that happen all the time?
Yeah, well, that's what we talk about all the time, people quoting for free in our business, and they shouldn't be doing it. Let me switch over to you. Yeah. You got your mindset right now, And now you've got to get on a phone and cold call. And this is the reluctancy that all salespeople have. The less you do it, the harder it becomes to do. What do you see? You've trained so many people. What do you see that the top sales guys do to get themselves in that state of mind or just pick up the phone and call? Because I know a lot of our listeners, whether they're still doing it themselves or even whether they're not just making straight cold calls, just calling the prospects that are on the hot list or the ones that they've seen in the past or they saw for renewals the prior years, what is it that they need to do to get their ass on the phone and make the call?
First of all, I have never seen a headline. I have never seen this in a headline, whether it be in a paper, whether it be online. Prospector gets murdered for calling somebody. It just doesn't happen, okay? Right? I mean, no blood is going to be spilled. No children are going to be harmed. Animals will be safe. The sun will still come up in the morning. I mean, get over it. Make the call. Now, okay, now that doesn't, what I'm trying to say is relax. Here's the whole thing. Go back to this list that I talked about in terms of the outcomes. You know you can help somebody. You know you can help somebody. You have an obligation. It's your responsibility to get in touch with them. It's your responsibility to have a conversation. If you do not get in touch with them, if you do not have a conversation, you are hurting them. That's the approach you want to take. And my goal is just to earn the right, the privilege, honor, and respect to be able to have another phone call with you, to have another conversation with you. That's all. I'm not asking for you to give me world peace. I'm not asking for you to will me your next child. No. I'm just looking to earn the right, the privilege, honor, respect to be able to have the next conversation.
One of the things I think salespeople have, and I just got an email from somebody the other day talking about, oh, this prospect emailed me this. He said they're not interested. They got a broker. They like them. They're already talking to another one and they're not interested. How do we define whether they're a prospect or they're a suspect? At what point? I mean, should we not be getting to a no? I always say, you know, my answer to them was, listen, find another prospect, move on.
Well, that's the whole thing. I want to get to know. I want to get to know fast because here's the whole thing. It's not about just having a bunch of leads. You know, the only thing a lead has is a heartbeat. And I've got a dog and my dog has a heartbeat. My dog is never going to buy anything from me. So, you know, that's just not going to work. So what I want to do is I want to get you to share with me some piece of critical information. This is a key signal that I look for. Now, here's the whole thing. I may call you and you've got an existing broker. Yeah, you're happy with them. You like them. You think they might be reviewing, doing kind of a review this year. Great. Okay. You call them and they're not providing you any information. Well, then they're just a suspect. What I look for is I want them to share with me some proprietary information. When they begin to say, hey, yeah, let me share with you. Here's what we've got. And the question I love to ask, and I love to ask this early on, what's the process you're going to go through to evaluate this year? What's the process? Now, I love asking this early on. All I'm doing is I'm just listing for cues. I'm just listing for signals. There's going to be no silver bullet, but I'm just listing for what's the tone, what's the temperature. And then what I'm going to do is I get done with the call and you might say, okay, well, yeah, we'll get back together Thursday at 2:00 on the phone. Okay, great, fine. I'm going to email them some information and I'm going to say, hey, when we get done here, I'm going to send you some information. Would you take a look at it and send me back your thoughts and comments on it? This is a key signal. If they look at it and they send me back their thoughts and their comments, that means they're a little more interested. Now, if they don't, it doesn't necessarily mean they're a true suspect because it could just be busy. But it's one of those little indicators that I begin to use. See, what I want to do is I want to involve you outside of the scheduled times of our calls. Because if all you're doing is you're saying, hey, I'll go ahead and meet with you next Tuesday, or you want to do lunch? Oh, yeah, I'll do lunch with you. Who cares? I don't care. If you can't do something for me outside of the sales call and provide me some proprietary information that goes beyond just the information I'm going to need to put the policy together, to put the plan together, then I come in and say, now I've got a real prospect.
if they're not willing to make any effort, you know, one, I like that you pointed out, what's the process look like? Because I would ask the question a lot of times earlier in my career, is to say, you know, talk to me about, if you quoted out in the past, yeah, you quote out every year. Okay, great. When's the last time you changed your broker? 8 years ago. So I want to say, okay, so you pretty much quote out every year and you waste everybody's time. Thanks. Have a nice day. I mean, sometimes they'll tell you everything you need to know without even knowing they're saying it to you.
And yet the new person runs all the way down that path because they're excited. They're like Willy Wonka. They get to quote, they get to quote, they get to quote, they get to quote. I can spend all day putting quotes out there and wind up with zero to show for it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a matter of qualifying them as soon as possible in the beginning of the meeting. And that's what you get as a veteran, and I'm sure you've seen, is they're better at qualifying out the gate. They're not wasting time. They're not getting excited just because maybe it's an opportunity.
Yeah, because I want to make sure that this somebody I can really spend some time dancing with. And if it's not, I'm checking out as quickly as possible. I see desperate agents, desperate brokers, what they do is they get excited because they got the meeting. They get excited. They got the meeting. I don't care if you got the meeting. I could care less. What did I learn from the meeting? What's the next step? And yeah, you're right. I mean, if they sit there, you know, if they haven't changed, I mean, boy, there are some legacy brokers out there that, you know, we have both seen this. Legacy brokers that don't get replaced until the HR manager of the company they're working with or the CFO leaves. And then when that person leaves, then suddenly the legacy broker leaves. They're that bad. But they're just firmly entrenched. They're firmly entrenched.
And that's where you got to just pick it up and say, I'm going to move on from here because there's just no shot in hell that I'm going to get them.
Right. Don't waste your time. The most valuable asset any salesperson has is their time. As a broker, I could sit here and spend all day, weeks on end, putting together quotes and get nowhere. And all I've done is wasted my time. And I want to sit there and ask myself, what is the percentage of quotes I put on the table that I actually get to bind?
Absolutely. What do you think a salesperson, how much time should they be spending, you know, prospecting versus, you know, I mean, listen, we all love to be selling, but how much time is really needed for a salesperson to hit his numbers typically from a prospecting standpoint?
Well, this is going to vary by what is the market that you're selling into? What are the policies that you tend to, you know, there's a lot of variables, but I always say I got to be willing to spend at least 25 to 33% of my time prospecting. And those are minimums. If I'm a new kid on the block, I'm going to spend 50 to 75% of my time. What I see happening is I see too many veteran brokers out there. They sit there and they really don't prospect at all. Their prospecting consists of networking. And no, what that means is they're really too lazy to prospect. And I'll tell you what, if you want your business to start eroding, all you have to do is stop prospecting. So I always go 25 to 33% is the bare minimum, even for the veteran, even for the veteran. Veterans listening, watching this, listen up, 25 to 33. And if you're a new kid, it's going to be 50 to 75, period. Now, we always got seasonality swings in there. I mean, the majority of healthcare policies, you know, I mean, we're all working on kind of the same calendar, which is another little technique that I love finding out from prospects early on. What is the calendar you're working under? When are you putting the new plan out there for your employees? Because again, if I can get some kids that don't operate on that traditional calendar year, that gives me some more opportunities.
What are some of the bigger companies that you've worked with? What do they set around for their salespeople? Like, are there certain amount of hours, times? Like, hey, listen, you need to be banging the phones X amount of times. That maybe are good tips that some of these guys listening can utilize or put in place with their salespeople.
Yeah, it's funny. I've got a company that I won't say the name because if I said it, everybody would know it, and everybody, you know, they claim that they want their new people on the phone 6 to 7 hours a day. And I go, 6 to 7 hours a day. Okay, fine. But how in the world are they ever going to learn the business if they're only calling 6 to 7 hours a day? See, so I think that's a big bogus. Here's the whole thing. The reason I think, you know, our industry, unfortunately, has got a lot of churn, right? I mean, we get a lot of people who come in and they don't cut it in the first couple of years. In fact, I've got a guy right now I'm working with. He's in year three, and he's got a pretty steep number. If he doesn't hit that number here in year three, he knows he's gone, you know. And we put an overemphasis. Now, I want to overemphasize prospecting. I want to overemphasize, especially this time of year, right now, February, man, I want to be banging the phones. I want to be banging them hard to get stuff in the pipeline, the top of the funnel. But I know other companies. I know another company I work with, healthcare space, insurance, if I said the name. They play in the big B2B Fortune 500. They say, oh, no, we only want our people doing about 1 hour a day at the most. It's just because of the type of customer, the type of client that they happen to be going after. So again, you know, down at the Medicare supplement market, let's kind of run all over the food chain. Man, I see those people, you know, it's got to be 8 hours a day. You're 100% nonstop because there it's like, how many leads can I work? So again, you know,
industry specific. Give us some ideas on, in those initial first sales meeting where we have a lot of brokers and consultants out there, and a lot of the challenges that they face when they get these first meetings is they don't know what to say. They go in there pitching product.
Yeah. Here's the whole thing. Hey, you got invited in, you're sitting in the conference room. First of all, those people that you're speaking to, and chances are it's going to be a carpool meeting, okay? Because there's several people from that end in the room. You can't be wasting their time. But what you do have to realize is a couple of things. Trust is the currency of business. And unless you establish a level of confidence, it's not going anywhere. Now, how do you establish a level of confidence? You have to establish a level of competence. What does this mean? That you understand their industry. You understand their business. You understand the challenges that they face. Here's the whole thing. They undoubtedly did not wake up in the morning and say, man, my highlight is I get to sit down and I get to have a meeting with X person representing X insurance agency. That is not what they want to do. But what they want to do is they want to be surprised. So if I can walk in and I can share with them, I can share with them some numbers, I can share with them some insights as to things that you found in other companies, similar industry, other areas of the country, or what you've seen from other providers. Hey, here's a report that just came out from Mayo. Here's a Cleveland Health report. Fascinating insights in terms of trends. And where does this look like for you 5 years from now, 10 years from now? I love engaging people in that level of conversation early on. Why? Because it allows me to demonstrate my competence. I begin to say, this person's talking about more than just trying to get our coverage plan.
So yeah, it's interesting. Just come in and surprise them with something. I mean, Craig talks about it all the time on the show is do your research before the meeting. Just don't go in there thinking, I don't know anything about your business, your industry. I mean, read their website, read the news, just do a Google alert on them.
I tell you what, but the number of people who walk in and say, so why don't you tell me a little bit about your business? Hey, look, cowboy, cowgirls. Look at the internet. You know, if you can't do the homework before you go in, you are offending every person you're sitting down with. Because you know they've Googled you, right? I mean, our reputation arrives before we do. Before they allow you in, they've Googled you. And if you can't minimally Google them as an individual,
it's disrespectful. I mean, I even researched their prior companies to see what their prior companies are about. So maybe I can parlay into conversations. Maybe they understand things that I'm going to be talking about because they were working in a different role at the prior company. I mean, I know everybody's busy, but if you're a little bit more of a veteran, you've got other people in the office that can put this stuff together for you. I'd have a whole sheet prepared for me before I went to my meetings, and I would tell them, I'd say, here's the information you got to look up on the prospect before me going to these meetings. You have to prepare me so I can just run through this, you know, the day before the meeting, or even if I'm running it last minute, at least I have this information to go to. I used to call a little cheat sheet, make me my cheat sheet for the meeting so I can prepare before the meeting or even while I'm in it. I just got stuff to glance down on. If it goes sideways in a meeting, I got something else to talk about.
Because here's the whole thing. You walk in and it demonstrates respect. Because if you can walk in and say, I noticed that last year you opened up this new division over here, or you did this or something like that. And you ask them insights on that, on stuff that you've learned. They go, wow, this guy's done his homework. She's done her homework. That's gold. That's valuable. Because now what you're doing is you're coming across as an individual who cares about them. And again, it comes back to this competence, confidence, trust.
What are we selling in the first meeting? You know, I always talk about we're not selling, in our industry, a product in the first meeting. We're really selling, like you said, it's the trust, know, like, and trust. I need to get them to trust me to get to the next step. Are we not selling ourselves? And again, yeah, we have to sell some sizzle as to what's to come without giving them, you know, the steak.
Yeah, you've got to sell them the confidence of you, that they can trust you, that you are a person that they say, hey, you know what? I can have another meeting with this person, and he or she is not going to waste my time. You know, that's absolutely key. Because here's the thing. The higher the level of trust I create with you, the deeper the content will be on the meetings I have with you. It's just simple. High trust creates deep conversations. And ultimately, that's what it's going to take. Because otherwise, all I'm going to do is I'm going to put a quote across the table. And there's going to be no substance behind a quote. And they will stay with their same broker.
Let me go to marketing for a second, because I think a lot of the selling, and we do a lot of training on the marketing side, is, and I've learned marketing really well over the last couple of years, is a lot of the selling of yourself too can be done in advance through your marketing. Okay, you do a great job at marketing. I mean, how much of that is, you know, done prior to you even getting there? And how important is it to have that out there about you, because we're in 2020 now?
It's huge. I mean, this is why I say your reputation arrives before you do. And I can't say that enough. Okay, let's cut right to the chase. LinkedIn happens to be a pretty viable business-to-business tool, okay? Now I'm not a fan of social selling and all that sort of stuff. I mean, it's got merits, but what I crack up over are the bad profiles that too many brokers have out there. Well, I don't really spend much time on LinkedIn. Well, I know you may not, but you know what? That HR person who you're about ready to meet with has gone out, because you know what's interesting? HR departments live on LinkedIn because they use it for recruiting purposes. They use it for employee purposes. You better have a robust LinkedIn profile. You better be seen as a person who contributes to the industry. Now, what do I mean by contribute? Thinking, thought. What are you posting? What are you saying? What are you sharing? The positioning of your company is so critical, because again, there's guilt by association. I'm amazed at the individuals. You know, it used to be said, let's step outside the health industry. Let's step outside the insurance industry. It used to be said, IBM. If you were with IBM, you could always get a meeting. Well, of course, IBM has kind of stumbled and fallen the last 5 or 10 years. But, you know, IBM had such a stature that if IBM called, you're going to take the meeting. So your marketing presence is huge, critical. Absolutely. I can't understate it, because you know what it does? It allows you to be you 24/7 without you being you 24/7.
Yeah, we talk about it, myself and my partner, Craig. Craig always would say, listen, if your prospect Googles you and you're in the witness protection program, that's going to be a problem. If you don't come up as an authority in the industry, whether you've written articles, you spoke places, you've got videos out there, they're just not going to feel comfortable. It's kind of like in the old world, and maybe I wasn't around then, but I think maybe I was in the beginning, was them peeking outside the window to see what kind of car you drove. Okay?
Yes.
Same thing.
Yeah.
Right? This is the way of looking to see what kind of car you drive, is looking you up on Google to see what the hell you got going on.
I got to share a real example. I Googled an insurance agent. This was an agent who was working for a company I was doing some work with. And this guy said, oh, he's a rock star. He was claiming to be a rock star. So I Googled him. What came up? A storefront auto insurance place that he had worked at 15 years before. Some industry expert. If that's what Google is saying about this guy, he's no industry expert. You know, right. Google is the proof of performance. Yeah, absolutely critical.
I saw a video you did the other day about inbound and outbound marketing. I'm going to do a show on, I still haven't done it yet for my audience, but I want them to understand the difference between the two. Give us a synopsis of what you talked about in the video of inbound versus outbound marketing. Cause so many people think like just telemarketing. That's it. That's the only marketing.
No, two complete things. Inbound marketing, inbound. These are when you're doing a great job marketing and you're creating some leads, you're creating people who are looking at your website and so forth. These are people who have an itch. They've looked at you for some reason. I can even count inbound marketing as somebody who's looked at your LinkedIn profile. There's an itch. I got to jump on that extremely quick. Now, when I mean an itch, if you have an itch, you want to get it scratched right away. If I don't scratch it right away, but I wait 3 or 4 days to scratch it for you, I'm stalking you. That's just weird. See, I got to jump. Speed sells with inbound marketing. So what I say is inbound marketing has depreciating, inbound leads have depreciating value. In other words, I got to respond to it quickly. If somebody's out on your website, I got to jump on it quickly because if I don't, it goes away. Outbound is appreciating. I've got to get them to appreciate me. I've got to appreciate in value with them. Because they don't know who I am. They're not taking my call. So I got to be prepared that I'm going to have to make 5, 10, 15 calls, emails, mailings, different pieces of information to create enough of an awareness for you to do. But here's what I find. Too many brokers, what they do is they lump the two into the same pot. So the inbound winds up getting treated the same way as the outbound. And the outbound, they never quite do well. And then they complain, well, gee, marketing isn't working.
Yeah, marketing doesn't work.
Yeah, right. How many? Right. No, because you've got to have a separate cadence for inbound than you do for outbound.
Inbound is, you know, your marketing top of the funnel, right? I always say it's long money. Marketing is long money. Yeah. I had a broker call me one time who had done a website. And it's like, did a website, like, all right, when did the lead start coming? I was like, this doesn't work that way. Nobody's ever filled out my contact form. Doesn't work that way. In today's world, to go in and check it, just to check you out, you need to market to get in their awareness circle, to let them know you're real. I had a guy call me one time, you know, that blew me off when I was working with them. And then all of a sudden, 6 months later, called me back and said, I saw that you were doing an event and couldn't make it, but I saw it and I know you're our guy. Let's get to work. Right. So it's just constantly letting them know you're legit. You're out there, but you still have to go back out and reach. You have to run the outbound to them. So like you said, it's a coordination of both of them. But it starts, you have to do both in today's world. Right. All the bigger companies are doing it. You're going to get left in the dust if you don't. Can you do just outbound? Yeah, but it's not going to be as successful and it's going to be colder.
It's going to be colder. Think about it. Coca-Cola. I think we've all heard the name Coca-Cola. They spend millions and millions and millions of dollars on advertising. Well, we already know who they are. Why are they spending millions and millions of dollars? Because they know it works. So if somebody like Coca-Cola, Ford, Sprint, Apple, all these companies can spend millions and millions of dollars for names that they know, then it means that you and I had better be doing something. We had better be doing something and something pretty good because otherwise we're going to get lost. So we do. You've got to have the marketing machine in place to make your outbound be effective. The two very much complement each other. Don't sit there and say marketing doesn't work. Why do I write books? I write books. That's part of my marketing plan.
Yeah, there's no money. There's no money in selling books.
All right. Well, yeah. We can share stories on that one, right? Yeah. But what does it do? It creates that long tail. It's the same thing with the website. It creates the long tail. I put YouTube videos and all this sort of stuff out there. It's long tail, but it creates awareness.
Yeah, think about this. I heard it one time. The Craig's son, Mark, said it was at our event we had last year. Is you look at McDonald's, right? If I ask you a question, Mark, who makes the best hamburger in the world, right? You'd have no idea who it was. You don't know. Nobody knows. I've asked people that question. I don't know. You know who McDonald's is? Yeah. Of course you do, right? Do they make the best hamburger in the world? No, it's terrible. It's not only is it terrible, they made a movie about it that tells you it can kill you, and they still sell more hamburgers than anybody. Why? Because they're a marketing company. They're the best marketing company in the world, in my opinion, okay? So that's the reality. So when you're competing against a bigger firm or what have you, and not saying everybody's bad, but like, they're just really good at marketing. They're a marketing arm. That doesn't make them good, right? It's just like it's just like a hamburger. Nobody has an idea of who makes the best hamburger. And that proves my point. So when they haven't heard about you, now you could say, listen, use that metaphor. But yeah, it's all about marketing at the end of the day, you know, in my opinion. And I want to kind of wrap with this. Where do you see the future of selling, the future of the salesperson with new social media, AI technology? What's on the horizon? What do we have to start to learn to do better or change?
Yeah. In fact, the last section of my new book, I talk about the future of sales. AI is here to stay. Okay. It is real. And the biggest thing that I think salespeople have to realize, your job is no longer to bring to the customer any piece of information they can find on the internet. That is dumb. Those days are gone. What you have to do is you have to bring to your customer a level of questions that they had not thought of before. We must be seen as the person who comes into an organization and can ask you questions that you had not thought of. The salesperson of tomorrow, and really a salesperson today, needs to be able to walk in. You might be sitting down with the HR person, you might be sitting down with the CFO, the CEO, whoever it is. And you have to be able to confidently ask them questions that they don't have the answer to, and you don't have the answer to, but collectively you're going to find out the answers to. Now, what does that do? Positions you in a completely different light, but only confident people will do that.
It's like Tony, we had Tony Hughes on the show, your buddy, and he talked about the salesman's dying. It's a consultant. And that's what we talk about all the time on our show. Well, listen, we will end it with that. Mark, thanks so much for being on the show. Make sure you go ahead and pick up his new book, March 31st, A Mind for Sales. Mark, thanks so much.
Thank you so much. Great selling, everybody.
All right, guys, we will see you on the next one. Take care.